Good morning, everybody.
Good to be here. Good to be here. I didn't care about the snoring too much, but those bears, that was another question, that's for sure. Were there really bears out there? Come on, guys. Be straight with me, huh?
Yeah?
Okay. Yeah, that's good.
Don't worry, they only go for the slowest guy.
They only go for the slowest guy? Well, that's probably me.
Those are the nice bears.
Yeah. How about this phone up here, guys? There's a bunch of girls' phone numbers on there. I don't know if y'all want it. It's yours, is it? Oh, it's good to be here this morning. Feel a lot better. I got a good night's sleep, believe it or not. And I didn't know there was bears there. Didn't care. So it's just good to be home, as I said, and be with my own people. As I said, I was with two very toxic days down in Phoenix with that business thing. And I can't tell you how good it feels to be amongst my own kind and, feel safe again. And it's good to be here. Beautiful, beautiful place. If you would, Rick, I told you I was a former teacher and coach, so, you know, teachers always have handouts, and so, I actually brought you guys a handout. I call it my pocket emergency card. It actually is a trifold. You can fold it up and put it in your wallet, and, I give it to the guys I sponsor, and it's kind of it's the things that I use daily on a maintenance basis, and I just have to keep it handy because I don't stay serene very long. And it's got the Serenity Prayer in it, the third and seventh step prayer. On the front it says, "Do the stitches and leave the patterns up to God." And on the back, we're going to talk about this a little bit. You know, when we get to the maintenance steps, what I call the daily keynotes, which were given to me by my sponsor. And hope you guys will keep these and put them in your wallet, and we'll talk about all these things a little bit, as we go through this weekend. You know, I was telling Rick on the way over, when you're asked to do something like this a weekend, it's pretty intimidating. Because there's a lot of guys in this room that have a lot more years sobriety than I do, and I know a lot of you have been around, and, you know, I know that you've had guys here to talk to you, Tom High being one of them who I know very well, who are guys that, you know, have been my heroes and icons in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so, I mean, I need to say that because I don't have anything new to tell you probably. I mean, I know you guys know the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, most of you, a lot of you, if you've been around backwards and forwards. And as I said last night, you know, all I can really ever do and what I'm asked to do is carry my own experience, strength, and hope. And I really, maybe a little bit of a comment on that as we start out. You know, I think, I don't know about up here, but down in our area, you know, what's happened, as I kind of alluded to last night, is we've gotten so smart, you know, in Alcoholics Anonymous. We've gotten real educated. And sometimes I wonder how those old guys that had to get sober way back in the day ever got sober, you know? Because they didn't, back in the day, as you well know, they really didn't study the big book. That really didn't come back into vogue, I think, until about the 70s. And, you know, they certainly didn't have all the stuff that we have today in terms of how to study the big book and, you know, workshops on, you know, all the steps. Those poor old suckers, you know, they just had to stay sober by, you know, by helping each other, you know. And I love, we were talking last night about the old guys and guys that are 40 years and more. I love to be around them because all they'll ever talk about is, you know, is, well, you know, on Monday night, they told me to be out on the curb, and Jack and Joe were going to pick me up. And Tuesday night, they told me to be out in front of the house, and three, four other guys are going to pick me up. And that's the way they did AA. You know, all they knew is that they had to stay into action, and they had to help each other. And I say that because, you know, somewhat, you know, as we've gone on with this, we can't help but get cerebral about it, right? And down around our place, we've got people who are teaching the steps. We've got a lot of people who are preaching about the steps. And if anything, this weekend, you know, the thing that I would like to do is talk about a step use. Because all I can really tell you is they were given to me to use. And over the last 19 and a half years, when I've chosen to follow them and use them, my life's been pretty good. And when I've chosen not to follow them and use them, my life has not been very good. And so this is going to be a step use weekend in terms of talking about the steps, because that's the way I was brought up in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I'm not going to be very complicated about this. For those of you who came to, you know, get some really new and insights about this whole thing. You're not going to get them from me, you know. Probably what you're going to hear from me is the same old, because, you know, the good part about this thing for me is that it's only complicated, you know, if I let my mind make it, and I do. But the bottom line about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is it's a real, real simple deal, and thank God for that, you know, thank God for that. You know, I like to stay pretty much with the literature. I like to stay pretty much with the book. However, you know, I was listening last night. I love to listen. You know, I was so tired last night I could not keep my eyes open. But I wanted to stay for that meeting and listen to you guys. Because, you know, we talk a lot in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I had this thought one time. Think about this. Wonder if one day God turned the sound off in Alcoholics Anonymous. One day he turns the sound off. Now my question would be, would it still work? Think about that. Can't hear you. You can't hear me. Could Alcoholics Anonymous still work? And I thought about it. I said, yeah, I think it could still work. You know why? Because I would watch you, see? And I would watch you guys standing around, you know, talking to each other. I would watch you, example, after the meeting, cleaning up everything. I would watch one guy, you know, pull another guy off to the side and spend his time talking with that guy. You know, when I'm at home, I watch people take somebody in their car and drive them all the way across town after the meeting. See, if I could just watch you, Alcoholics Anonymous would work for me. And see, that's a real important message to me. Because see, it is all about what I do and not what I say. It's all about what I do and not what I think. And that's really good news. That's really good news for a guy like me, because I had a really screwy mind, and I still do, you know. And I don't think the way that I should think most of the time. And as I said last night, I get caught up in my own feelings and thoughts and beliefs. And you guys said, hey, we don't care. Are you willing to act in the way that we suggest that you act? If you are, then you're going to be okay, Tim. You know, you might be crazy as hell most of the time, but you're going to be okay. But anyway, I was listening to some of you guys share last night, and, you know, Derek, I don't know where you are, especially you, and the spot that you were in right now, you know, after being around. And what he was sharing was that he came in, and he had that initial, you know, pink cloud, and boy, this is a good deal, and I'm all on fire. And then all of a sudden, he ran into that gray spot where everything just grays out. And, you know, I need to tell you that if anything this weekend's going to be about, it's about, you know, how the steps have been so important to drag me through all those gray areas in my life when they popped up. Because, you see, although the book said very clearly that I will be rocketed to a fourth dimension of living, and I have been, I just don't stay there very long. You know? I just don't stay, Derek, in that fourth dimension all the time. And you know, but isn't that the truth? And I want to give you a couple of visuals here that have helped me. And these have nothing to do with Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a guy that I listen to. He's actually a Catholic priest, and his name's Richard Rohr. He's a Franciscan priest, and he's not an alcoholic, but he's been fascinated by the 12 steps in Alcoholics Anonymous. He's a spiritual lecturer. And he actually has done a couple tapes on the 12 steps. And what Rohr actually says, he says that he believes that the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous will be the, you know, American contribution to spirituality. When history looks back on our era, that the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous will be looked at as the most profound spiritual, you know, things introduced into this century. And, you know, and to that end, you know, what he has a set of tapes that he put out. And he starts it off with this poem, and I don't know the poem, but the essence of the poem was this. He said, a man built his house by the ocean. And for a long, long time, you know, he existed in exact harmony with the ocean. And he would watch the ocean every morning, and it was, you know, so beautiful, and he'd listen to the ocean. And they went on in this relationship for a long time. But then one day, Derek, the ocean washed up across his home and completely submerged that house underwater. His friend, his life, everything had been going so well, and all of a sudden now, what he thought was the way it should be, now had washed over him. in the essence of the poem at the very end, he says that what he realized at that point in time that he had to learn now to breathe underwater. Breathe underwater. And what Rohr, he used that analogy as to what the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous are meant to be for me and for you. Is that when we show up, you know, life has washed us under and we're gasping for air and we're trying to figure out how this is all going to work. And what the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous truly have been for me over the last 19 and a half years, when I've been washed under unexpectedly, you know, these steps have been the mechanism that you gave me to breathe underwater. I was talking to somebody else today. You know, all of a sudden, the problem with my story when I tell it, I become the relationship expert, right? Everybody wants to run to me and said, you know, I've got this divorce going on. Tim, what do you think? My sponsor told me one time, said, Tim, for you to give anybody, you know, directions or on a relationship should be a felony offense. But my point is that, you know, isn't this true? You know, isn't this true that the journey in sobriety, it's very clear, is sooner or later for all of us going to be about learning to breathe underwater. And sometimes we pop out, you know, and everything is great and sunny and sunshining, and we just love that. But the reality is we don't stay there. The reality is sooner or later, that ocean is going to wash over us, whether we like it or not. And so I say that for this weekend, whatever you got going on, you know, if you're sitting there and you feel like you're underwater a little bit, then hopefully this weekend we can talk about, you know, I don't know that I can get you out of the water. I don't know if I can pull you out, but I think, you know, what I've been taught by the guys ahead of me is how to keep breathing, how to stay alive, okay, until God recedes that water and takes it back away. Because, see, that's really the deal. You know, I'm not going to get myself out of that water. And the other part, Derek, I wanted to share with you and kind of visualize this. And someday I want to see this picture. Rohr talks about a picture that he has in his office. He says the picture is of a man, and the man is stretched out like this, and on one hand, there's an old rusty chain with a big old black dog on it. And on the other hand, there's a silver golden thread with a white swan. And his point was, is that what spirituality really is to him is holding those two things, the old black nasty dog on the chain, and the white swan on the golden thing, is holding those two things in a loving tension. And see, that really became important to me because, Derek, what I heard you say last night, you know, when you showed up at Alcoholics Anonymous like we all do, if you were like me, that old dog was dragging my butt all around. You know, I was hanging on for dear life and on the dark side, and that dog was just dragging me. Got in AA, though, after a while. You all hooked me up with the swan, all right? And I'll be darned, the swan didn't take off, and I was just floating all around for a long time, me and the swan, looking down on you people, right? And you see, what he's saying is, neither one of those in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is where we want to end up. On the best days that I have is that I've got the old dog, and I know he's still there. He ain't going away. And I've got my swan, you know, the beautiful swan. But my best days in Alcoholics Anonymous, when I work the steps the way they've been designed, is I can hold those two things in a loving tension. And you see, that's really important for me to understand because I have to be honest with you. When I got here, I was like, the dog is going away. I'm never going to see that old sucker again. And me and the swan are going to fly around together forever and ever. This 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, took me a while to understand that. You know, isn't it interesting that for years, you know, prior to Alcoholics Anonymous, they didn't know what to do with people like us. The medical profession didn't know what to do with us. You know, even the religious, you know, side of it didn't know what to do with us. You know, I told you I came from that Irish Catholic family. And my daddy took the pledge. If you're a Catholic, you know what that is. You know, and I look back on it, and what an awful thing, because what he had to do to stop his drinking, he had to go with his priest, and in front of God, another person, and the priest pledged that he would not pick up a drink of alcohol. And you know what happened every time. You know, he lasted about 6 months, and then he would pick up, and then, boy, you talk about guilt, shame, and remorse. Because not only did you let yourself down, you've done it in front of God and your Catholic priest. But that's all they had going back in those days. You know, and that's what I'm saying, you know, is that the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous never ceases to amaze me. You know, the miracle that somehow, and here's the hit, because back in those days, what they understood was these guys can't drink successfully. And they locked them up, and they did all the things physically they thought that would deal with them. That will stop them from drinking, right? What they didn't understand is what Silkworth, you know, incredibly uncovered, you know, in his deal, is that, no, there's something else with these guys. Not only don't they stop drinking when they start, something going on, you know, deep down inside of them that we can't exactly figure out. But what Silkworth figured out is unless they deal with that, whatever that is, they really don't have much chance to stay sober. You know, what an incredible, you think back to the 1930s, guys, what are the chances of a physician, you know, coming up with that thought? You know, I mean, it just gives me chills sometimes when I read that chapter over and over. And what they somehow knew was that, yeah, we could stop drinking. The problem was we always started again. And so whatever this spiritual mess was down inside of us was going to take a process. And that's why when you think about the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, it's pretty miraculous that they understood that we're going to have to give them a daily program of maintenance to somehow quell that fire that's deep down inside so they don't go back together again. So the other thing I wanted to say is keep in mind, you know, what I just said. Where are you with that? Where are you today with the old rusty dog on the chain and the swan on the golden thread? You know, and see, what I tell you is, on any given day, it's a little bit this way for me, or a little bit this way, you know. And the deal I have to understand is, and the steps clearly say this in 10 and 11, is that, you know, I don't get attached to either one. My deal is to come back to that loving tension between the two. See, because, you know, if you listen to my story last night, and we were talking about this a little bit today, you know, 19 and a half years sober. You know, I got divorced when I was 4 years sober. I got divorced when I was 9 years sober. You know, I could tell you a lot of other things in those 19 and a half years I'm not very proud of, you know. I'll tell you a story, for example. Every time I get on an airplane, in 2001, listen to this date, we were talking about going skiing, and I took my family skiing to Colorado in April of 2001. And we were in the Denver airport. And my son said, "Dad, I forgot my cell phone. I left it up in the cab." So I told the rest of my family, my kids, my wife, "Stay here. We're going to go back and get the cell phone. Be right back." I thought I had plenty of time to get on the plane. Go up and get the phone. As we're coming back to the gate, I'm seeing they're shutting the door to the airplane. The next thing I know, I'm up at the door, pulling the door, saying, "Let me on the GD airplane. I'm getting on." The stewardesses are yelling for security. I'm saying my family's on the airplane. My son is saying, "Dad, what are you doing? Have you lost your mind?" Guys, I'm going to tell you, if that was after 9/11/2001, you'd have a different speaker today, you know? And here I was at that point in time, you know, what, 12 years sober. That's not very pretty stuff, you know? But my point is that, you know, my whole journey has been about falling down, bloodying my nose, scraping my knees, and getting back up and saying, "Dad, Father, you know, help me. Help me stumble back uphill, you know, just a little more each day." And that's what this is about. And I say that because one of the things I'd like all of you to do right now is, over the next 24 hours, just kind of do a gauge on where are you with that whole thing about the dark side and the gift side. And see, I really thought that the steps were about getting rid of that whole dark side completely. And that someday I would be this spiritual giant, okay? When I first came into AA, again, I don't know about you guys, I didn't really understand this whole thing about spirituality. I knew I was messed up, that was for sure. But I actually remember sitting around when I was early sober thinking about how I might look someday in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and I had this idea that I'd be this kind of white-haired guy, very astute, very, very cool looking, you know. I wouldn't ever say much in the meeting. You know, I'd probably smoke a pipe. I'd probably sit around the meeting, smoke a pipe, and look really spiritual. Maybe once or twice a year I'd get up and say something really profound, you know? And everybody go, "Woo, that old guy's really got it," you know? I kind of thought of myself like as the Gandhi of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know? I mean, that's actually going through my head. I don't know what spirituality is. I think I know what it should look like. And almost immediately, I started gauging what the spiritual Tim should look like. You see, that's total insanity. I have no more idea what the spiritual Tim should look like than the man in the moon. I just think I do, you know? And, you know, I remember thinking 2 years sober after my birthday. We celebrate my birthday on a Saturday morning, my AA birthday. For no reason I can remember, except I probably wasn't getting the, you know, respect that a guy 2 years sober should be getting. But I went home that morning, sat down on the end of my bed, and just completely lost my mind. You know, I started screaming at the top of my lungs. I tore the drapes off the wall. I flipped the furniture over. My kids showed up at the door looking at me like they used to when I was drunk and saying, "Dad, what is going on?" And what was going on? 2 years dry as a bone in AA. I had a Saturday morning, and I didn't know what to do with myself for the rest of that day. You know, I was still at that point where, you know, what now? What do you do with this stuff that I'm carrying inside of me? How do I live through this Saturday with the insane rage and the insane thinking that's going on within me? You know, and I was just moving to a point to understand, which many of you know today, is that, you know, I was just getting to the point, Derek, of what Alcoholics Anonymous is really all about, you know? There's a person around our area that says that, you know, sooner or later, as you hang around here, you run right into yourself. Sooner or later, you're going to run right into yourself. And what they meant is you're going to run into that part of you that the steps were designed to help you with, you know. And that's the real deal. And thank God, you know, we were talking today about divorces and about things like that. Over the last 19 and a half years, as I ran into that dark side of myself, that old rusty dog, you guys kept me in the loop of Alcoholics Anonymous. You asked me to stay in the process of the 12 steps. And I made it through. You know, and that's as good as it's been for me. You know, I wish I could have told you. So, because, you know, nothing is farther from the truth. That I've looked spiritual at times, I certainly haven't. You know, talked spiritual times, I certainly have not. You know, but the good news is, you know, is that's not the way it was supposed to be. You know, one of the things I want to share with you about the steps as a group before we start talking about them individually, the way I was brought up in Alcoholics Anonymous now, I don't like controversy in AA because I don't think it serves any purpose. And that's the way I was brought up by my sponsor. But the way I was sponsored and he was sponsored is that we were looked at the 12 steps is that the first nine steps are the program of recovery, the first nine steps. And then when you've done those first nine steps, you have done the program of recovery as directed in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then 10, 11, and 12 are the daily maintenance steps that we use the rest of the way to do this deal. Now, again, that's the way I was raised. And let me tell you, I mean, obviously there's a lot of people that look at that a lot differently. I mean, a lot of people who do multiple fourth and fifth steps and that type of a thing. You know, I guess I was basically brought up that all those components of the first nine steps obviously are in 10, 11, and 12. And so in my 10-step process, there's a lot of obviously fourth and fifth step work that goes on. So, I mean, you're kind of splitting hairs with it, and it's not worth an argument over. I just want you to know how I was raised in AA. And so when I talk about the steps, you know, I talk about them in that vein. And when I do the steps with my guys, you know, that's kind of how we set out with it, the first nine. Because, again, let me tell you the other thing why my sponsor kind of wanted me to do it that way. And the reason he said is that after step nine, he wanted me to understand that I was recovered and capable. Recovered and capable. Meaning that I was capable to go out in the world now as a sober person and live life on life's terms, is that I wasn't a victim any longer, and I wasn't dependent any longer. And I don't know about you guys, but again, down around us, I mean, we've got guys three, four, 5 years sober sitting in the token clubs all day long, still victims. Boy, I could get a job. I wish I could get a job, you know, but you understand, you know, I am an alcoholic. You know, and I really think this is so important. One of the key things, you heard my story last night, you know, is understanding that the 12 steps are always about my powerlessness and God's power and my responsibility. Think about it. Steps 1, 2, and 3, my powerlessness, God's power. Steps 4 through 9 are my responsibility to clean up my mess. And step 10, 11, and 12 are some combination, right, of God's power and my responsibility. You know, and I say that because, you know, I can go in the token club and sit there all day and say, boy, I wish I had a job. But I probably need to be out putting applications in, right, if I want a job. Yeah, God's power, but my responsibility. That's always going to be the case. You know, and I love responsibility in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, thank God for it because, you know, that I understood a lot quicker than I understood this whole thing about powerlessness. It took me a little bit of time on that. As I said, the other thing is I don't, you know, there's the way I was raised in AA, consider this a workshop because, you know, when you get into this whole process, it's very easy to think. And that's why I'm thinking of, you know, a lot of people today have gotten to this idea. We have a program in Louisville called Recovery Dynamics. And we have a huge place called the Healing Place that was established. And it's a good deal. Probably 200 men now. You know, it's a homeless shelter. And they started a program called Recovery Dynamics, which was brought to Louisville by Joe McQueenie and his program out of Little Rock, Arkansas. And it's designed around the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. The problem with it is when you're teaching 200 men a program, it can't help but become, you know, systematic. And so when you talk to the guys that I sponsor from the Healing Place, you know, they will talk about that they I can't go on to step 3 because, you know, I haven't finished my worksheet on this thing. And it's all structured, you write, as if, you know, it was a course in school, which just drives me insane. See, because there's nothing farther from the truth about the 12 steps. There's no learning curve with the 12 steps, you know. That's what I'm saying. If there was, those poor, unfortunate guys that had to get sober way back in the day would have never been able to get sober. You know, it's a simple process of action. And that's why when I ever talk about this, I always talk about a step use, you know, session, not a step workshop. Because, you know, I don't want anybody the idea that it's a cognitive function. The purpose of the steps for me is what? Is to find the power, you know, because I didn't have any. Now, again, that's not what I thought when I showed up. You know, in all honesty, I don't know about you guys, I used to sit around when I first got here and I'd raise my hand. I'd say, I'm Tim, I'm an alcoholic. And that's the part you heard. What you didn't hear was, but not quite like you guys. I am just a little bit different, you know, and obviously, that is the deal, right? I talked about last night, you know, I did it, he didn't do it. That being a little bit different, we might laugh about it, but it's the part that kills us, right? It's the part that separates us from the herd. It's the part that takes us out. And I guess the other thing, too, was, I don't know about you guys, even when I first put my hand up and I said I'm an alcoholic, I couldn't have defined that for you. I had no idea what alcoholic was. I had no idea what alcoholism was for sure. And, you know, the good news is, in AA, they said, you know, you don't have to know that. You don't even have to buy into the whole thing. But if you have nowhere else to go, I think I heard Ron say that last night, then why don't you stay here and listen to everybody and see maybe how that might work in your life. You know, because the deal was, well, you know, my best thinking and my best actions at that point in time had me living in a basement, having had lost my family, you know, my kids and everything I owned again. And that's the best I can do. I put some notes down here so I don't get lost on this thing. I want to make sure that I, you know, hit the things that I want to talk about. You know, one of the things that, you know, you'll hear it over and over again, and I never understood this until, you know, I got into it, was, you know, my feelings, thoughts, and beliefs. And I said this last night and think about it. You know, I don't know if there's anything we can do about this. You know, when I showed up here, I was all about my feelings, thoughts, and beliefs. You know, I'd always been about my feelings, thoughts, and beliefs. And, you know, what I realized today is that, thank God, you know, you all weren't too interested in my feelings, thoughts, and beliefs. In fact, you weren't interested at all about my feelings, thoughts, and beliefs. And I couldn't understand that because my whole life, you know, they had dominated. You know, it was the bottom line in everything, meaning, you know, maybe, you know, and I had no doubt. Why did I have such trouble in relationships? Feelings, thoughts, and beliefs. Because there always comes a time if my feelings don't line up and match up, my thoughts don't match up, and surely to God, if I don't think something is going to be good for me, you know, then I'm just not interested. I'm just not going to do it. And you see, the good news about the 12 steps is they will work for me just as well, whether I feel they're going to work, whether I understand them, or I think they're going to work for me. Thank God for that. My, you know, one of the analogies I heard is like penicillin. You may not like penicillin, but if you get the shot, you know, it's going to cure your cold. It's the same thing here, you know, and I didn't understand the steps when I started out with them. Didn't really think it was going to work for me, but they said, well, Timmy, why don't you give it a little try anyway? And it worked just as well. You know, I looked one time, think about this, 19 and a half years sober. And I thought one time, if I had a videotape of my whole 19 years of sobriety, I wouldn't want to see it, but if there was a videotape, how would that look? And here's what I think it would look like. Probably about half of the days, half of the times, I'd be in the rooms of AA, and I would just love all you people. I just think you were the best thing that ever happened. I think Alcoholics Anonymous is the best thing that ever happened. And I would think this is really going to work for me. That would be about half the time I've been here. The other half the time, if you had the videotape and you could catch me, I'd be sitting there thinking, this is the dumbest thing that God ever created. All these people are hypocrites, and it ain't going to work for a guy like me. The other half the time, the good news is, I felt, thought, and believed one way one time. I felt, thought, and believed the other way the other time. But because I did the same thing and I stayed here, I'm sober either way. And you see, there's something about that now I don't even like. Because I'd like to be sober and feel good about it, understand it, and always know that it was going to work for me. That's what I'd really like. And if you're here and you're looking for that, you might as well go get on your car and go on home. All right? Because it's not going to happen. You know, we have to learn. You know, and that's the biggest thing that I've been taught in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because somebody asked me earlier, you know, we're going through Martin, we were talking about, how do you get through these, what seem to be difficult, impossible times? As I look back on that, was I happy about it? No. Was I very pretty in how I talked about it? No. And the deal was, is that I stayed in what I call the loop of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, in the loop is prayer, sharing, and caring. Prayer, sharing, and caring. Prayer, sharing, and caring. And basically what you all told me, if you're in one of those three things, Tim, if you're praying, if you're sharing, if you're helping, you know, you're probably going to get through whatever you need to get through. You know, that almost sounds too simplistic, you know. Almost sounds like that's got to be more difficult than that. For a guy like me with the level of problems that I have, and gosh darn it, I think so much more, you know, acutely than most people, and I feel so much more, you know, down deep more than other people, you don't understand. And you guys said, oh, yeah, we understand. But why don't you just do that anyway, Tim, and see if you don't get through it. And so I got through the divorces. I got through the suicides. I got through the deaths. And, you know, you only know that by looking here back now. Because I want to tell you, when I was going through those things, when I was trying to breathe underwater by myself, I always felt like I was going to drown. And you guys said, you're not going to drown. You know, just hold our hands and keep breathing, keep taking one step at a time, you know, and you're going to one day pop out, you're going to be on the surface again. You know, and that's the story, right? That's a story. That's the stories that we tell, you know, from the podium of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, the other thing, because I know there's a lot of new people, it's just, it's obvious, but maybe it wasn't obvious to me when I showed up, the difference between the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And there, this is the point I'd like to make about them. You know, Sometimes, and there's different camps in AA around the country, and you've got your program people, and you've got the fellowship people. They're all caught up in the social part of it. And it's like one, they're almost like in competition with one another, you know? It's like Bud Light, you know, taste great, less filling, you know? The deal is, you know, the magic of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, the interesting thing to me, when you talk about the program, the spiritual principles of AA, those are not new. Those have been around since the get-go, you know, since God made the sun and the earth. You know what I mean? Helping other people, We didn't create that. Trusting in God, we didn't create that. Cleaning your own side of the street, we certainly didn't create that. Those things, those spiritual principles have been around forever. And fellowship, that's certainly not new. I mean, there's been all kind of fellowships of all kinds for years and years. The miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous was that they found out that those two things together, intertwined, somehow are the things that keep us sober. Not one, not the other, you know, not separate from, in combination of, those two things together are what make us what we are. And I just interesting, because I don't know why people in AA fight with that. You know, it's totally insane. Meaning my sponsor said one time, and I believe this, is that, you know, you could throw me in a closet with a big book and say, Tim, get well. It ain't going to happen. I might stay in that closet for years with that big book. I am not going to get better. I've got to have you guys. That's the neat part about it. It was the spiritual principles and the combination of one drunk identifying with the other that makes this thing what it is. So if you're new, you know, certainly are there people that are around that are just in the fellowship? Yeah. You know? And then that won't work. If they're truly an alcoholic of my variety, that won't work for them very long. And there's other people who have gotten so caught up with the program and have become, you know, step Nazis or whatever you want to call them. They are trying to do all that on their own. And they're forgetting about all the rest of the people. And so my message would be, at least for me, that's why, you know, it only makes sense to me. It only works for me when these spiritual principles that we're going to talk about in the 12 steps are done in conjunction with other people just like me. You know, and as I said last night, and that's people just like me. I'll tell you a story. When I was early sobriety, I had an uncle who had died of cancer. And for some reason, because I was on this noble quest to become a better person, I signed up to work for the hospice. And so what I did was I was a volunteer, and every Monday I would go and sit with a dying cancer patient while the caretaker would take some time off, you know. And I'm only about a year sober. And I need to tell you, it was a good thing I was doing, but it was draining me dry. I mean, I don't know if you've ever sat with cancer people that are dying. I mean, it's no easy task for anybody. But me, 1 year sober, you know, I didn't have much spiritual basis to go on as it was. But so anyway, I'm telling my sponsor about it one night. Guess what I'm doing? I'm helping these cancer patients. What do you think about that? You know? And I'm thinking, I'm going to get an attaboy, and what a great guy you are, Tim. And I don't get that at all. What he says to me is, what are you doing? He said, Tim, and I really got mad because I immediately thought, well, he's just jealous, you know? He's jealous, you know? Because he's not doing it, and I am. And he says, no, no, Tim, what I'm saying is, you got to work with your own kind. You're a year sober, son. You don't have enough to give, you know, anybody. But if you're giving it to somebody, it has to be another drunk. Because the way our thing works is, not only, you know, you're giving it, but I'm constantly getting back, right, from the people that I'm working with. I tell you a great story about that hospital. The very first patient I had was this guy. He had 3 months to live. Great guy. This guy was a square dancer. And I don't know if you know about square dancers, but they are a unit, buddy. They're bonded together like, you know, as tight as any group I've ever seen. But anyway, and he was a great guy, and I'd go out there every Monday and sit with him. And he had about 2 months to live. And this one Monday, kind of show you where I was. This is the exact case. It's a hot August day. I'd gone to my office, and this is incredible. I had, you know, enough financial problems as it would, but my idiot brother-in-law, who was my CPA, had made a $60 tax mistake on my tax return. And this is unacceptable, you know. And I am just enraged, and I am just crazy about this. And I'm driving out to see my cancer patient that Monday. And I know I'm crazy, right? I can't get calmed down. And I pulled over to the side of the road, and I got a Coca-Cola, and I'm drinking this Coca-Cola thinking, man, I got to get it together. I got to go see my guy. So anyway, I did the best I could. I pull up. I go to this guy's house. And I go in there just like I did every Monday, and I sit down in my chair, and his bed was right there. And he had tubes in his nose and tubes in his arms and tubes everywhere, you know, and he was just laying there. And I sit down in the chair, and he rolled over, looked at me, and went, God, you look terrible. I thought, man, you know, a dying man just told me I look terrible. But the point I was trying to make was I was trying to give, you know, at that point, something I didn't have. And I was trying to give it, you know, in an area that I didn't need to be in at the time. So it kind of goes back to the story I told you last night about my buddy Chris, the kid I sponsored in the Big Brothers program. Big Brother's a great thing, yeah. But, you know, he needed to be in the giving-taking relationship of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, you were talking about Tom I. You know, Tom was down at our retreat last year, and I spent a lot of time with him, and we talked a lot about that. You know, what my sponsor was telling me that day is, Tim, yeah, you're supposed to help other alcoholics. You know, other alcoholics. There's a specific reason that it says in the 12th step, you know, having had this spiritual awakening, we carry the message to other alcoholics, your own kind. Because I have guys at home that go, they're not sponsoring anybody, they're not helping any drunks, but boy, I'm doing all kind of good things, Tim. Trust me. I am carrying my message home. I'm carrying it to work. I said, I bet you are. But I said, wait a minute, guys, what about carrying it to another alcoholic? See, somehow we lose sight of the very essence of what makes our thing so special and so unique. You know, and that's why what Tom says, you know, the gift for me is, and it's always been, is just sitting down with another alcoholic one-on-one. And that's why I love my home group. You know, my home group's in the inner city, and it's full of newcomers every day. Most of the guys I sponsor are right out of prison or right off the street. And it never, never eludes me what this is all about. On the other hand, we have meetings, I'm sure you have them here, in the more affluent areas of our city. If you went in there time after time, you know, they've become more like social gatherings than meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, everybody has their own chair and they sit in the same chair. Nobody gets up when anybody else comes into the room. You know, it's become all about their social meeting every week. You know, and see, that's real dangerous for a guy like me, right? Because I need to remember by seeing that next drunk that what this is all about. It's not the Rotary Club. It's not church. It's Alcoholics Anonymous. And what we do is help drunks. You know, now, as basic as that sounds, you know, many, many people are wondering, away. Tom, he'll tell you a story about his home group in North Carolina. And they have maybe 50, 60, 70 people. And one Saturday morning, he said, how many people in here have ever been on a 12-step call? Three people raised their hand out of 70 or 80, he said. And see, what's happened in what's happened with Alcoholics Anonymous is that's kind of moved out of our genre because the treatment centers and everybody else are sending them to us, and we assume that the 12-step has already been done. You know, and I need to say to you is that, boy, that just won't work for me. You know, the thing that keeps me going day after day, you know, is just working with that guy. And there's no doubt what his problem is. There's no doubt that he's an alcoholic. And that keeps me right on focus and right on center, you know, where I need to be. Let's see where I want to go on this. You know, and I think in kind of setting us up too for the rest of the weekend in terms of, you know, Rick was saying on the way in, and it's true. I mean, it's so easy talking to guys that, they're obviously very interested in this or you wouldn't be here. You know, I have to laugh because we have one of these in December in Louisville. We started about 6 years ago, and I'm sure it's the same thing. We start telling guys about it, you know, months ahead of time, and Yeah, I'll be there. If nothing's going on, I'll see if I can work it in. And I said, no, why don't you commit to it now? Well, I can't do that, Tim, but we'll see how it goes when it gets toward December. And you see, we have other guys that, no, it's locked in. Somebody said that last night. First weekend in December is the men's retreat. Put it on your calendar. You know, and it has to become important to you. And see, what I know about groups like this is, you know, Bill Wilson said one time is that, you know, 95% of people in AA, they show up and they get sober and they basically go to meetings and they basically do the deal in a generic way. That's about 95% of the people. But he said then there's 5% of the people who that's not good enough. They want more. And see, I'm guessing that's the 5% that's here this weekend. You know, and I was the same way. I didn't want just the basics. I wanted all it had to give. You know, and then that's the thing I tell my guys all the time too. You know, I've been so blessed to be able to travel and to expand my AA world. You know, but we got guys, and I'm sure you know them too, at home that, you know, they'll never get out of their home group. That's as big as their AA world will ever, ever get. And I tell my guys, look, you got two choices. Your sobriety can be as big as you want it, or it can be as small as you want it. See, small as you want it wasn't going to work for a guy like me. This was either going to be my life and everything that goes with it or not. And I say that, so I really know that the types of people that are here this weekend are the types of people that you want more. And I'm always, it's so easy to be around people like that. You know, a couple of things I'd like to throw out too, that, you know, some of these little things, that just like on the card I gave you about the stitches, because I really see the steps today as my stitches. You know, those are the principles that I'm going to use to stitch with. The other thing is the attitude, you know, attitude. You know, if you look in the dictionary, one of the definitions that's really helped me with attitude is called angle of approach. Your attitude is your angle of approach. See, I thought it was somehow about a mental adjustment. I thought it was about trying to conjure up a new feeling. It's not at all. Attitude is the angle of approach that I choose to take as my action for that day. You know? And one of the things, for example, we were talking about, Martin, earlier about your situation. You know, I have certain feelings about things, no doubt about it. But my attitude is going to be directed by the angle of approach I choose that given day to take as I act toward it. You know, the good news about our program, somebody told me, is that, Tim, they don't lock people up for thinking crazy. They lock people up for acting crazy. You know, and thank God for that, you know, because I know some of you the same way. If they locked you up for what went through my mind, you know, again, you'd have a different speaker here today. You know, one of the great parts of sobriety is that you've given me some processes to process that crazy old picture show that runs in my head. And I just don't act on it, you know, as much as I used to. You know, you talk about that marital situation of mine. Again, today, I'm very cognizant of this, you know, that my wife today, she's the same as she's been in so many different ways. But, you know, a lot of the things are just who you are, right? But some of the things today that peeve me off by the way she is or how she acts or what she says, it kind of goes through my mind. The difference today is somehow the power has been taken from that, and somehow I just don't say what I used to say, you know? And somehow God, you know, relieved me of the necessity to have to, you know, to defend myself. And that gets to that whole idea we were talking about last night about transformation. What we're going to do this morning here is take a break, right about 10 till. We'll do these like 50 minute sessions, take a 10 minute break and try to kind of stay on the hour here. And, let me just clarify a couple things about this whole deal. Cause sometimes when I share about, you know, my feelings, thoughts and beliefs, a lot of people are offended or saying, he's saying my feelings don't count. He's discounting my feelings. And if you were like me, that really upset me. And we had some rough old timers in Louisville, and they were discounting my feelings all the time. And I'm like, I'm sure a lot of you, I'd been in therapy, you know, I had been in all that stuff, you know, I'd been in anger management one time. That's crazy. I think back on that stuff today. I'm not discounting your feelings, okay? What I was told is, Tim, your feelings are real, but you can't make a shrine to your feelings. That's been your problem, son. You have made a shrine to your feelings your whole life. And you're never going to get well in Alcoholics Anonymous if you make a shrine to your own feelings. So please don't be sensitive about that. You know, and the last thing I'd like to share, and we'll come back after the break and talk about step one. And I just love this. You know, my sponsor had me read immediately Chuck Chamberlain's book, A New Pair of Glasses, and I still carry it with me everywhere I go. And Chamberlain says something in there that's helped me so much because, you know, what he says is, whatever I choose to focus my entire attention, care, and love on can become the most interesting thing in the world, you know? Whatever I focus my entire attention, care, and love on becomes the most interesting thing in the world. You know, last night I was talking about the difference today in me versus years ago. What is in it for me to sit in a sandbox with my 3 8-year-old kids for two, or 8 grandkids for 2 hours? But what I found out with this, if I focus my entire attention, care, and love on that sandbox, it becomes the most interesting, wonderful thing in the world. I'll give you another example. If you're in the program Alcoholics Anonymous and you do a lot of step work with guys, come on, let's be honest. Sit and listen to fifth steps cannot, sometimes is not the most interesting thing in the world. But I have to ask God, help me focus my entire attention, care, and love on this man's fifth step. And you know what? It becomes the most interesting thing in the world at that point in time. You know, and right on through, you know, especially the things that I don't care for too much. You know, if I really do that, it never fails to help. So what I'm saying to you as we finish this first session, if you're having struggle, listen to me drone on time after time. Just focus your entire attention, care, and love, and it will become the most interesting thing in the world. All right, let's take a break. We'll start again at 9 o'clock.